dear members of the days, distinguished rabbis, ladies and gentlemen. Before I start my address, I would like to tell you a certain story about my grandfather, Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was Robin Brisk, that everybody knows. In those days, it wasn't customary for a Rav to speak every Shabbos. Like all his contemporary colleagues, Reb Chaim was expected to speak twice a year, Shabbos HaGodol and Shabbos Shturi. On Shabbos HaGodol, he spoke only Halacha. Shabbos Shturi, however, the Balabatim of Brisk insisted that he must speak Divrei Techocho and Divrei Musar. Reb Chaim was very unhappy about it, but couldn't have helped it. The Balabatim expected it. Whenever Reb Chaim spoke Shabbos Shturi, Divrei Techocho and Musar, he used to preface his address by saying, Rabbi Isai, I'm going to say the Musar and Divrei Techocho. I'm cognizant of the Gemara of Shoyt Atzmicho V'Atach Shoyt Achel, and of the Gemara Kmo Ami Yeish B'Dei Hazeh Mish Yedei Alechich. Consequently, when I will be saying the Musar and Divrei Techocho, all the Musar will be directed against myself. Not on you. I don't think I'm worthy to say Musa to you. But then the rest, the Chaim said, if the different Musa would be directed towards myself, why do I have to come to school to speak? I can close myself up in my bedroom and say the Musa to myself. I would have done that. But if I were to close myself up in the bedroom and say the Musa to myself, then you don't think that I'm Mishure. So because of that, I decided to come to Shul and to say the Musa to myself. If any one of you happens to think that he's also in the same position, all right, that's not my fault. But it would be pure monarch. So if Reb Chaim felt unworthy to say Musa to other people, so it's a kalachemia, ben b'nei shel kalachemia, that I am unworthy to say Musa to anyone, certainly not to the people who are assembled at the OU Convention. And in respect to myself, there is an additional reason as to why lately I have to say Musa to myself. Lately, I'm constantly involved in introspective thinking. The reason is that lately, I'm going through an identity crisis. Now, you all know that Erikson, the psychologist, spoke of an identity crisis in teenagers. But I'm in the upper 60s, and I am going through a very serious identity crisis. I don't know what I am. Am I a Buddhist? Am I a Mizrahi? Am I a Mitzvah? Some people tell me, some rabbis who consider themselves as representatives of the left-wing modern Orthodox government tell me that I am not only a Buddhist, I am a Shortality. On the other hand, there are some right-wing rabbinim, called them Kitzelim, I don't like to use that name, who accuse me of being a Mizrahi, because in Shiva's Brisk, we say hello without a bracha. And many Mizrahim are angry as to why we don't say a bracha. There are some Mizrahi who are very angry at me for the fact that in Shiva's Brisk, we don't even say hello without Rochan Yimor Shalai. And one time, when I criticized very severely the practice of saying hello Yimor Shalai at night, and I said that this practice is grounded in ignorance and in chutzpah. So one called me out and he said, you are worse than the Nitzoy Kav. So I don't know what I am. Me, I'm in money. And on a political level, I'm also confused. Am I a Republican? Am I a Democrat? I don't know what. So because of that, I'm constantly, lately engaged in introspective thinking. And I constantly engage mentally in a soliloquy. So because of that, it's important for me to think aloud and to say tichoche to myself. It will be a pure monologue. In the course of my address, there might be certain expressions that will appear as a criticism of the right-wing rabbis. So it will be directed against myself, because I consider myself a right-wing rabbi. There will be certain statements that will appear as criticism of the left-wing rabbis. That will also be directed to myself. I consider myself as a left-wing rabbi. I even consider myself as a centrist. I'm everything. I'm a right-wing rabbi, left-wing rabbi, centrist, Abud and Mizrachim, it will count everything. So whatever criticism I'll be saying, it will be directed against myself. The convention theme of this OU convention is Tikkun Olam, meeting our obligations to our community and the world. Rabbi Stolper, in his letter to me, writes that specifically the convention theme is what is the obligation of the American Orthodox Jewish community to the non-Orthodox community and to the non-Jewish community. I decided to discuss only one half of the convention theme, namely, what is the obligation of the American Orthodox Jewish community to the non-Orthodox community. This question involves a very controversial problem. The other half of the convention theme as to our obligations to the non-Jewish community does not involve a controversial problem. I am confident that 90% of the Orthodox Jews in this country will agree that vis-a-vis the non-Jewish community, our relationship with them and our behavior towards them has to be based upon the concepts of tolerance, equality, brotherhood, and mutual respect, as it was explicitly expressed and pointed out by the Harav Amiri in Bovakame, in Avizore, in Sanhedrin, in Yume, and in many other Mesichtes, and by the Be'er HaGelo, in Cheshmish Betzimen Tov Chofei, and in Cheshmish Betzimen Reish Nun Tes, and by the Tzemach Tzedek, in Shuvas and Yodeo Chesribis, and by the Och HaShulchon, in Yodeo Simen Reish Nun Alev, and by the Sheva Meshiv, this is Shaul Matinson, in his Madhuret Lisoye, on Chish Mishpet, Simen Nun, and by the late Hagoyen Harav Henkin Zechen Lebroche, in his article in Hadarom called Keitzayin. All these Chachomim point out that vis-a-vis the non-Jews of today, the Christians and the Muslims, they are not in the Avizor, and they have to be treated like the Eretz. And in respect to the Eretz, the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Melachim says explicitly, the yearly שנהגים עם ירתי שוף בדרך ארץ ובגנוס חסודים כמו עם ישראל. אפילו אם הוא עקום, עקום מין ספגנס, אומרו חכומים שאומרים ריובים לטעמי סנייהם ולבקר חיליהם שנאמר תיב אדישם לקהיר ורחם עבר תומאסו ונאמר דרוכר דרכיני ים ויכול מצביסר שורם. So in respect to the non-Jewish community, there is no controversial question. Only those Jews are not knowledgeable in the halacha and don't know what the attitude of the Chachmei Yisrael throughout the generations has been can make all kinds of bizarre statements. But it's not to be discussed. It's not a non-controversial question. However, in respect to our obligations toward the non-Orthodox Jewish community, we have different views and different approaches. I think that the question as to how we should act toward the non-Orthodox Jewish community should be treated from the halachic perspective and from the halachic perspective only, namely by analyzing the various halachos relating to our relationship with the non-Jewish community. I would like to preface the halachic discussion by telling you a story I heard 44 years ago from one of the Dili Ador, Reb Chaim Halev, about the Tzemach Tzedek. This happened approximately 150 years ago when the Tzemach Tzedek was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, one of the secular masculine in those days who was reputed as an apikeres, came to the Tzemach Tzedek to discuss certain issues with him. The Tzemach Tzedek received him cordially and talked to him for several hours. Some of the Kanoim, the zealots in the Babich, were very upset by the friendship that the Tzemach Tzedek has shown to the Maskal Apikeyas. However, not even one of the elders in the Babich had the audacity to approach the Tzemach Tzedek and ask him why he received the Maskal Apikeyas in a cordial manner. But there was a Lubavitch in those days, a young man in his early 20s, an outstanding Jew, a prodigy who was considered as a Boki Bishas, and also as a Boki in Dalet Helke Shochanov. He decided, in face of the exhortations by Zikni Lubavitch to the contrary, to enter the study of the Tzemach Tzedek and reprimand the Tzemach Tzedek for his cordial treatment of the Maskal Apikeyas. He said to the elders in the Babich, who exhorted him not to act so impulsively and so audaciously, "I am going to reprimand the Tzemach Tzedek for showing friendship to the Maskal Apikeyas." In conformity to the Gemara in Misachet Bon Yitzhiye, Dachon Dalet, to Riach, Eili Yeroho Rav Le Talmid, Talmid Le Rav Naim, Talu Lema, Hoicheach, to Riach, Mikol Mokhi. He entered the study of the Tzemach Tzedek, and he said to the Tzemach Tzedek, "I don't understand the Rabbi. A Maskal, who is known as Napkiras, preaching heretical concepts and is not a great ancient Israel, pays a visit to the Rebbe, this Maskal definitely comes within the category of those who are living or admiring. To eat, one is not supposed even to save their lives when their lives are in jeopardy. And the Rebbe, Lord died at the Rebbe, does not oust the Maskal Apikeyas from his house as he should, but he even talks to the Maskal Apikeyas for several hours, as if the master had been a nice person. The Tzemach Tzedek listened patiently to the stringent hoche by the young Gil and Kanoi. And when the young Gil and Kanoi finished his piece, the Tzemach Tzedek said to him, "Young man, I listened very attentively to your admonitions to me. I really don't have to explain my conduct to you. I acted in conformity to the deen. However, in order that you and your followers should not labor under the notion that I infringed upon the halacha of Meridim Limailim, I want to point out to you that unfortunately you did not learn the halacha of Meridim Limailim in depth. Had you delved thoroughly into the intricacies of the halacha of Meridim Limailim, then you would know that the halacha of Meridim Limailim is a prerogative that can be exercised by daily Yisrael in an extraordinary, unusual situation. If after due deliberation, the daily Yisrael come to the inescapable conclusion that the application of drastic measures against tattoo crossing is indispensable to the preservation of the Torah. But under ordinary circumstances, the prerogative of Meridim Limailim cannot be exercised, as it is mentioned explicitly by the Shitun Gubetis at the end of Misachas Bogotame in the name of the Ravamiri, and by the Piski Tesves in Abizogad Akhovov, and by the Rambam at the end of Neven Buchim, Book 3, Chapter 50. On the contrary, Tzemach Tzedek said, not in an extraordinary situation when there is no special Tzemach Tzedek to apply drastic sanctions against Apikosim, then the Bach in Siman Rishon Aleph in Yodea says that it's even incumbent upon us to maintain friendly relations with Apikosim and Mumlachs by supporting them, visiting their sick, consoling their mourners, and burying their dead in the same way as the Mishnah in Gittin requires it in connection with pagans. And the Tzemach Tzedek also said to the young Yilud Kanoi, you felt impelled to give me the choche because of the knowing of Mitzie of Arturo Talmud Rab, so I'll give you the choche of Rabbi Talmud. You are obviously a big deal, perhaps even a big savage, but you are not a Yosha. The Tur and the Shulchan Aruch have four divisions, Erechaim, Yeredeye, Ebenezer, and Cheshe Mishpot. The Erechaim has 696 simonim, Yeredeye has 403 simonim, Ebenezer has 178 simonim, Cheshe Mishpat has 427 simonim. In total, there are 1,704 simonim in the Dalat Chodesh on Kolaruch. The Aloch of Meridim Limailim is discussed in the Tur and Shulchan Aruch, in the last simonim of Cheshe Mishpat. But what do the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch discuss in the first simon of Erechaim? In the first simon of Erechaim, the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch cite the Mishneh in Loves, Perkei Mishnechot. There's the last Mishneh in Perkei of Loves. Yehuda ben Teimei Meir, Hevi Askan Omeir, Vikal Kanesher, Rotz Katzvi, Vigiber Karvi, Lasei Sritzein Avicho Shev HaShemayim. Yehuda ben Teimei says, be as bold as a leopard, light as an eagle, swift as a deer, and strong and courageous as a lion, in order to do the will of thy Father in heaven. And the Torah says, Askanomeir, be as bold as a leopard, Omar Kineged Ha'apikosim Hamalidu Amitzis. That is reference to the Apikosim who ridicule us for doing the mitzvahs. Whoever Pandemus Joseph says, Umasho Maras Kanomeya, Chinegadaki Kosin, Loyotso Lema Ashim Dabeya, Bechutzpe the Azus, Chinegadaki Kosin, Hamalikim or mitzvahs. So Azus in Midom Mikuno Adioit, Din Yisraeli Dabe the Azus of Bechutzpo, Negadak Kosin, Hamalikim or mitzvahs, Binkina Vedas Abele, אז בוודאי שידבר בחוצפה ובאזוס גם שלוים כמעט לסדר. ובסי יוסף פוינטס אאוט, that when the Torah says, be as bold as a leopard, he doesn't mean that we should talk insolently and rudely towards that person, because rudeness, chutzpah, is an unethical and destructive quality. And if a person habituates himself to talk with rudeness toward that because him, then no probability he will talk rudely to those who are not that because him as well. The Sematzedek said to the Yilu, the Torah says, Kisase hateiva yosho beine yad Hashem alekecho. Whereupon the Sitri says, Hatein bein shamayim, v'ayosho bein yodom. You don't adhere to the imperative of doing ayosho bein yodom. Do you know why? Because you learned the less simenish of an oath, which discusses the din of meridim lemailim, before you learned the first simenish of an oath, which mentions the halacha that a person should not talk with chutzpah towards anybody, not even towards a kadoshi. When the young Yilu heard this tichoche, he said to the Senat Tzedek, why does the Rebbe say that I did not learn the first simon in Shachonot? I learned all the simon in all the Dalet Chok in Shachonot. That's a Matzarek responded, I did not say that you did not learn the first simon in Shachonot. I said that you did not learn the Shachonot in the proper order. You started at the end and went backwards. That's why you are a Nikish, you're not a Yosho. This is the reason as to why you're not acting in accordance with the mitzvah of Astase Hatiba Yosho, Beine Adishem Alekacho, Hatoiv Beine Shomayim, Va Yosho, Beine Yoron. In order that you should become Yosho, you have to start learning new. And this time, you'll have to start from the first sinner and go to the end of the Shomayim. Then you'll become a Yosho. This story about the Selah Tzedek is expressive of the halachic guidelines in respect to the obligations incumbent upon us towards those who have the deen of apikosim relation, those apikosim who come within the category of meridim l'mailim. The overwhelming majority of the Reform and Conservative Jews in this country do not even come within the category of meridim l'mailim, because the overwhelming majority of the Reform and Conservative Jews have the deen of Tinik Shemishbo, and according to the Rambam Milchas Mamlin, have to be treated in the same way as regular Jews, and we have to extend to them the same degree of brotherhood and love as to Jews who are Maminim. I would like to tell a story about Reb Chaim, which is expressive of the same attitude and halachic approach as the one revealed by the story about the Tzemach Tzedek. In 1903, many Jewish youngsters in Russia became engulfed by the radical ideologies of communism and socialism, and the political radicalism of the Jewish youngsters was coupled with atheism and spiteful attitude towards Judaism. One young Jewish radical embraced who was known as the Munal Haqis in the presence of many Tsarist soldiers with a toga on his hands, shot Tsar Nicholas in effigy. This Jewish radical was sentenced to be shot by the fire squad within 1 week as of the sentence. This sentence was imposed in Aseret Shemichuvah in 1903. The Tsarist regime had one advantageous quality, namely, with a substantial bribe, Jews were able to obtain a revocation of his sentence. The magistrate of Brest-Litovsk said that if the Jews of Brest-Litovsk will pay a fine of 5,000 rubles, then the sentence will be revoked and the young radical will be released. Reb Chaim called an emergency meeting of the Rosh HaKol at his home on the day before Erev Yom Kippur, and he demanded of them that they provide the 5,000 rubles to save the life of the young radical. The Rosh HaKol, consisting of some who were observant and some who were not observant but Zionistic, unanimously spoke up against the Chaimen. As a matter of fact, the father of Menachem Begin was a member of the Rosh HaKol in those days. The other members of the Rosh HaKol said to the Chaim, it's a mitzvah, the outer alone with the devil, to have this young radical and communist executed. Reb Chaim responded to this argument that the mitzvah of the outer alone with the devil applies only to one who was nigmar din in miso by the Sanhedrin bisman habayis and not to any other Roshi. A few learned members of the Roshi HaKol said to Reb Chaim that inasmuch as the young radical was an atheist and a mumal haqis, he comes within the category of Meridian Lamarin, and consequently it is osir to save him. Reb Chaim responded to this argument by citing the Shittim of the Betzes at the end of the Kamek, that the din of Meridian Lamarin is a prerogative to be exercised by Dele Hador in a special situation of Sterech Hashor. However, the Rosh HaKol overruled the demand of Reb Chaim. A whole day of Erev Yom Kippur, Reb Chaim tried to prevail upon the Rosh HaKol that they should provide the 5,000 rubles, but without avail. Then, as all the Jews came into the shul in Brisk for Komitvei service, Reb Chaim told the Rosh HaKol that he will not let them sit for Midre until they will bring the 5,000 rubles and they will hand it over to the magistrate. They said to Reb Chaim in amazement, but soon it will be in Chippa. How can we do it? Reb Chaim said, Pikuach Nefesh is there in Chippa. Even the Pikuach Nefesh of the biggest Rosh is there in Chippa. Even the Pekuach Nefesh of a stupid Bundist is Deicha Yom Kippur, and I'm not going to let you say Kolibre until you bring the money to the magistrate. The Rosh HaKol became dumbfounded, and they did what Reb Chaim told them. They got the money and brought it to the magistrate and obtained from the magistrate a written release for the Bundist. Then they came to Shul, and Reb Chaim told them to say for Midre. These two stories about Tzemach Tzedek and Reb Chaim are reflective not only of the compassionate and tolerant attitude of the two Torah giants towards non-Orthodox Jews, even towards atheistic and anti-religious Jews, but are reflective of the general attitude of compassion and tolerance entertained by Eretz Yisrael towards non-Orthodox Jews, even atheists throughout the ages. I remember very well how in 1952, when George Kaufman, who was a jury judge, to our shame, sentenced Julius and Ethel Rosenberg to the electric chair for alleged espionage activity on behalf of Soviet Russia, the Chazanish, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, Harav Herzog, and Harav Nizir became involved in an endeavor to save the lives of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. These four daily sent cables to outgoing President Truman and incoming President Eisenhower, urging them to grant a pardon to Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. Curiously, but not coincidentally, not one reform rabbi and not one conservative rabbi was involved in the endeavor to save the lives of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, even though Dr. Oppenheimer, who was then the greatest expert on the atomic bomb, affirmed that due to the fact that Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were not trained in the sciences of chemistry and physics, it was impossible for Julius and Ethel Rosenberg to convey and divulge important information to the intelligence service of Soviet Russia. Curiously, the Chazanish in the Odeya mentions a remarkable point, namely that the Din of Navidim Lamailim has no application nowadays altogether, because nowadays drastic sanctions against heretics can only be conducive to the promotion of heresy and atheism, and not conducive to the preservation of faith in the Torah. In the ancient days, when the overwhelming majority of the masses were imbued with the Mune and Yerushalayim, and non-believers or only a few, drastic sanctions against heretics could conceivably, in special, extraordinary situations, be conducive to the preservation of faith in the Torah. But today, when non-believers are so numerous, drastic measures against apostasy could only be conducive to alienation and atheism. This remarkable figure by the Chazanish was mentioned by implication by the Tiras Chaim in his Chiddushim on Sanhedrin in Daf Kufyud Aleph. I would like to mention a story, another story about Rav Chaim that illustrates remarkably the distinction between kanoes against apikorsim and kanoes against apikorses. Rav Chaim once received a letter from a well-known kanoi in those days. In this letter, the well-known kanoi wrote to Rav Chaim that in view of the fact that the Maskilim and the Zionists are doing so much havoc in Jewish life, it is incumbent upon the Rabbonim to fight them and to pursue them. Rav Chaim was reading the letter, and Rav Simcha Zelig, the Dayan of Brisk, asked Rav Chaim what was written in the letter, and Rav Chaim told him what was written in the letter. Then Rav Simcha Zelig asked him whether he plans to join the writer of that letter in waging the war against the Maskilim, the Apikorsim. Rav Chaim responded, no. So Zelig asked him, why not? Rav Chaim said, I am the writer of this letter, cannot sit down at the same table and discuss anything between me and the writer of this letter. There is the same difference and divergence as between the cat and the housewife. The cat and the housewife dislike the house pest, but there is one basic difference. The housewife does not like the house pest because she does not want that there should be house pests in the house. The cat wants that there should be pests in the house. The cat would feel very miserable if there wouldn't be any pests in the house. The cat wants that there should be more and more pests so that the cat would be able to devour them. I don't like the masculine because they are crossing. I would like the total masculine and all the sexual Zionists should be true. I adhere to the concept expressed by Bruya Ishis Rameya, Yitamu Hatoi Minorets, the Lord Yitamu Hating, and my hope and prayer is that the masculine should be true. So I wouldn't have to fight anybody. But the writer of this letter, he would feel very miserable if the masculine be true. He would have no one to fight against. So because of that, I and the writer of this letter so cannot sit down together at the same table to discuss anything, to express it succinctly. According to the Chaim, there are two kinds of kanoim. They are kanoim of the cat syndrome, and then they are kanoim of the housewife syndrome. The kanoi of the cat syndrome is apt to direct his kanoes against the sinners, against the apikorsing themselves, not for the purpose of counteracting the apikorses and the vicious. And consequently, these canoeing would sometimes carry out their canoes in a violent way, like the canoeing who throw stones at the cars that are driven on Shabbos in Yerushalayim, and the canoeing who smear and even burn down bus shelters with indecent advertisement posters, even though they know that these tactics will tend to promote apoptosis and vicious, and will precipitate acts of sacrilege and vandalism. The reason as to why they act this way is because their motto is not in accordance with Bruya's philosophy. Their motto is Yitamu Chaitim, the Loi Chatoim. However, the canoim of the housewife syndrome, they direct their canoes not against the apikorsim and the rishoim, but against apikorses and the rishes. Their motto is in line with Bruya's philosophy of Yitamu Chatoim Loi Chaitim. Consequently, they carry out their canoes against apikorses and against rishes with dignity and without violence, while canoes directed against apikorsim and rishoim is an improper and destructive quality. Canoes directed exclusively against apikorses and rishes is an admirable and obligatory quality. Rabbi Yehine in Shavichube Shah Shlishi Simon Kupazayet Tanzan says that when one fails to show canoes, he uses that expression, when one fails to show canoes against apikorses, against sin, against cruelty, against deceit, and against falsity, he comes within the category of kat chalifim, in respect to whom the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that they are not recovered by Shechino. Shenema chiloi mifonov chonof yodei. And the Yireim says that whoever comes within the category of kat chalifim then violates the law deraise of loi sachlifu, sachlifu. It is obvious that when Orthodox rabbonim acquiesce and go along with the endeavor of reform and conservative rabbis to falsify the halacha by allowing conservative and reform rabbis to use the Orthodox mikveh that is under their aegis for a conservative and reform geulos, thereby perpetrating the fraud upon the converts, most of whom are sincerely interested in a genuine conversion, and also tainting the Jewish people with the blemish of spurious Jews, that these outright rabbonim definitely infringe upon the law of Pesach Nifo. Even though the Orthodox rabbonim do it Rishim Shomayim in order to preserve the unity in the Jewish community. For this kind of laxity on the part of Rabbonim and the Orthodox Jews to accommodate Reform rabbis and conservative rabbis with Giyush and Rik Aloha, we all have to say, Oshanu Mekolon, Veishnu Mekodei. And when I say we all have to say, I mean everybody, I mean myself, I mean left-wing Rabbonim, right-wing Rabbonim, centrist Rabbonim, Rabbonim Kanoim, all of us are guilty in this Avera. In a similar vein, when Orthodox Rabbonim remain silent in face of the impudent demand by the Reform and Conservative rabbis that their teaching and their gevurah be recognized as valid, like Orthodox teaching and Orthodox gevurah, then the Orthodox Rabbonim are guilty of chanufa, and all of us have to say, Oshanu Mekolon, Voishnu Mekodeya. You will not find it among the Catholics, that the Catholic, one single Catholic priest should advocate accommodating anti-Catholics. Only among us, among the Orthodox Jews, there is that kind of laxity in affairs. Similarly, when an Orthodox rabbi, and the religious leader in Israel, when faced with the dilemma of either resigning from his post as member of the Israeli cabinet, or submitting to the ruling of the Israeli Supreme Court, urging him, requiring him to register a Reform convert as a Jewish, decides to comply with the Supreme Court ruling rather than resign, then all the Jews, all the Orthodox Jews, whether they are Ashkenazim or Sephardim, who are silent, have to say Ruyu and say, Oshanu Mekolon, Voishnu Mekodei. I would like to conclude my address on the obligations of the Orthodox Jewish community towards the non-Orthodox community by citing again the Mishneh Novus in full. Yehuda Menteimeyer, Heliyas Tanodeyer, Kal Kanesher, Rotz Katzvi, Giber Kravi, Lasei Zritzin of Yehoshua Hashemayim. The same Mishneh that is mentioned as the first halacha in Shulchan Aruch. I would like to explain this Mishneh, which gives us the blueprint in our encounter with the Apikorsi, Hamaligim al Mitzvahs, as the Torah says, or the non-Orthodox community. Yehuda ben Taimi herein lays down four guidelines in our encounter with the secular non-Orthodox community. The first guideline is Hebeas Kanameya, be as bold as elected, which, as the Sios points out, does not mean Chas V'Sholem that one should act rudely towards apikorsim. Rudeness and chutzpah are unethical and destructive qualities and should not be practiced even toward apikorsim. But Hebeas Kanameya means that when apikorsim ridicule us for our devotion to Akkadosh Baruch Hu, we should not feel frustrated and inhibited in our commitment and dedication to Akkadosh Baruch Hu. As I pointed out in this address, that askanomia implies that we have to be kanoim against apikorses, kanoim of the housewife syndrome, as Rav Chaim expressed it. Not against apikorsi, not canoeing of the cat's finger. Now I would like to explain the other two guidelines. The second guideline is, Hevikal Kanesher, be as light as an eagle, What is the meaning of the expression Kal Kanesher, light as an eagle? In Shmos, Perek Tes, Posik Dalet, the Torah says, Atem Yisem, Asher Osisi Mitzrayim, Voeses Peral Tantin Shorim, Voeses Lai. Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. What is the meaning of the expression of comforting shore in this passage? Rabbi Levadia's former says, V'eser eschem al comforting shore derech me'ov aboish moi ha'nesher ha'melech hezbonov v'hum ha'avir asher lo yeloh v'ishum ha'infachem v'zeh le'habdil eschem mit'yadei yisanshi mitzrayim u'me'askeyem li'eslih. This implies that the expression I bore you on eagle's wings means that the Rebbeinu Shalom carried the Israelites high in the sky, above the space where the birds of prey fly, so that the Israelites were not exposed to the possibility of becoming devoured or contaminated by the abominations and perversions of the Egyptians. It follows from this that when Yehuda ben Tema said, "Have Kal Kanesher, be as light as an eagle," that in our encounter with Apocalypse, we do not have that stability. We have to soar above the spheres where the Reformed and Conservative rabbis operate. If we want to be secure against falling prey to their influence, Orthodox rabbis are not to have dialogues with Reformed and Conservative Jews. This never happened in the course of the millennial history of the Jewish people, that Orthodox rabbis Chachmei Yisrael should engage in dialogue with Karoim and Tzukim and Maisusim. Never happened. For Orthodox Rabbonim to adopt a resolution that is expressive of gratitude to the Rabbinic Assembly for rejecting patrilineal descent is not only inconsistent with the guideline of a Kal Kanesher, but is also reflective of an attitude of extreme shifus hanefesh, servility, and lack of self-respect. The plan to set up a national version for Deus and for Gittin, in spite of the fact that the motive is sublime, the motive is to reduce Mamzeres to a minimum. But as the Malach told the Malach HaKizarim, Machshavtecho Ritzio Ritzliat Vizbolchu Abu Masecho Yom Ritzulim. This idea of setting up a national vessel for Deus and Gittin, as sublime as the motive is, but it is a preposterous plan. It not only is an impossibility, it involves a mathematical impossibility. It's like suggesting to a convention of mathematicians that they should try to construct a triangle. Everybody knows that a triangle has 100 radians. Suppose someone will make a suggestion to a convention of mathematicians to construct such a beautiful triangle that will have not 180 degrees, but 504 degrees. Three times as much. But that's a mathematical impossibility. A desert, by definition, consists of three chachomim, Yerei Shamayim. How can a someone who is not a real competent rov
and the Yerei Shamayim be part of the Gezer. It's like trying to construct a triangle of 540 degrees. The third guideline mentions by Rudy Bekeme is that the Rots Katsvi be as swift as a deer. What is the meaning of this expression, swift as a deer? I think the meaning of the expression, have the Rots Katsvi be as swift as a deer, is that in our encounter with the non-Abbot community, we have to resort to integrated vision. We have to see what takes place in front of us. We also have to see what takes place at a distance from us. We have to look backwards. We also have to look sideways. When the deer runs, she constantly looks backwards and sideways. Rashi mentions it in Shir HaShirim, in connection with the shawl and the deer, that whenever a shawl or a deer runs, she constantly looks backwards and sideways to make sure that no one is pursuing the deer. The running of the deer is symbolic of integrated vision. An unfortunate phenomenon that is reflective of deficiency in integrated vision is the servile tribute that is paid by the Orthodox press and some modern Orthodox rabbis to conservative rabbis or conservative professors who protested against the decision of the seminary to ordain women. When I first read in the Orthodox Jewish press the enthusiastic report about the professor at the seminary who resigned from his post, allegedly in protest against the seminary's decision to ordain women, I myself felt at first, while I was still under the impact of this enthusiastic account given by the Yiddish press, that this professor was a real hero and that he deserved at least the Purple Heart Medal. However, shortly afterwards, I happened to read an article written by the same so-called right-wing professor and published in a very prestigious and scholarly Orthodox journal. After reading this article that was written by this so-called right-wing professor, I became dumbfounded. This article rejects the antiquity of the Torah Shebaal Peh. He writes that his thesis is, and I'm quoting him verbatim, that the simple medrash, according to him, means the halachas that are based upon the plain meaning of the passage, without recourse to the application of the so-called hermeneutic principles, Midrash HaTeil Rashi. The simple Midrash was developed relatively early, he writes, the second century before the Common Era. That's relatively very early. But a complex Midrash, that means all the halachas that are deduced from the Midrash HaTeil Rashi then, was developed much, much later in the second century after Kanya. And this professor had the audacity to write that many of the droshes mentioned in the Mishneh and the Medrash HaLoch attributed to earlier Chachomim were in fact developed and promulgated by Rabbeinu HaKadosh and by the editors of the various Midrashi Halacha, but falsely attributed to earlier sages in accordance with the practice that prevailed among scholars in ancient times to attribute something that was developed by a certain author to a previous author. and dimensions arrive, because the Mishnah following very broad says, Zut Roshe Dorash Yodek Kingdom. So he said, can you believe, is it conceivable that Yodek Kingdom, who lived about 800 years before the Common Era, deduced this Roshe? How can one believe that? So that proves that the bulk of the Droshes were developed by Rabbi Akadish, and the editors of the various Midrashi Halacha were falsely attributed to the earliest sages. Now the Mogen Sanhedrin said that the case, Vati Oma Kolati Lekulo, Min HaShamayim, Chutz Mididub Zeh, Chutz Mikolchim Zeh, Chutz Mikzeh, so and so. Zeru Kibara Dishem Goza. If one rejects the divine origin of one's worship, he comes within the posse of Kibara Dishem Goza. And here a so-called right wing professor, who is acclaimed as a hero by the Orthodox press, openly says that he rejects the antiquity, not only the divine origin, but the antiquity of the whole Torah Shabbat, from Aleph to Tav. That doesn't amaze me that the professor of the seminary who resigned in the protest against the seminary's decision to ordain women rights, things like that. That doesn't amaze me at all. But what amazes me is that such a radical article, which from the halakhic perspective is as despicable as the Bible criticism of Wellhausen, and much more dangerous than the Bible criticism of Wellhausen, publishes such a despicable article. How can we explain it? Well, there is only one answer, that not one member of the editorial board of this prestigious scholarly Orthodox journal read the article. Why didn't they read? They were so overwhelmed by the fact that this professor of the seminary resigned in protest against the seminary's decision to ordain women that they felt, why do they have to read it? Chazok al-chobah, she'en meitz mitachas yodeh, dobo she'en yisotan. What did he chose? He chose that unfortunately there are many sincere and well-meaning modern Orthodox rabbis who do not possess such great vision, who do not possess any vision, not even any spirit vision. And for this, we have to say, Oshamu Nikolam, Boishnu Nikodeh. Now the rest divine that Jude and Tina mentions is the Giber Kari. Be as strong and as courageous as a lion. What's the meaning of being as strong and as courageous as the lion? This definitely implies that in our encounter with Reformed rabbis and conservative rabbis in this country and in Israel, we have to act strong and courageous and not to yield to any pressures and lobbying. We have to conform to the motto of Theodore Roosevelt, talk in a whisper and hold the big stick. Theodore Roosevelt might have meant it literally, but I don't even have to show literally big stick. I mean, we should talk with dignity and politeness, but we should exercise firmness.